Ready as we'll ever be.
Okay. Good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol on Tuesday, December 20th, for probably our final commission meeting of the year 2016. My final meeting as chair. I'm looking forward to passing over the gavel, which we kind of officially already did last meeting, since this is a special meeting. So I will, first of all, it's about 10:30, call this meeting to order. We have just a couple items on the agenda. I don't think I have any opening comments. We have to stick to the items on the agenda anyways. We did have a special meeting this morning earlier. I'm sure Commissioner Christman will talk a little bit about that. And I may have some additional comments after that, following up on what you say, if you touch on that. Otherwise, no opening comments. Do you have any thoughts, Randy?
I guess that would be a question for Jack. This is a special meeting. My understanding was that during the special meeting, we always have to stick to
these special meeting topics.
I wouldn't think so.
Do we do opening comments, especially?
Typically.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, that's what.
I think the big thing is we can't add the discussion like we normally do. And if we want to add different things, we
right.
So now we've built intrigue.
This isn't a discussion. This is just, you've already had the discussion on this in the last meeting. You can talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'll deal with it if there's questions on at the end.
Okay.
Just to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and we'll proceed with this, and I'll have some comments on at least one of these agenda items as we go, and then we'll see what comes up in questions afterwards.
Very good. Commissioner Kolk?
I do actually have some comments. Just one line I'd like to throw out there. Obviously, it's been very cold the last few weeks, and everybody's, you know, looking at their energy bills, and now it's warm back up, which is great, but I just encouraging customers out there to look at balance billing. I'm always pushing balance billing earlier, and also this time of year, we're going to get customers that get their bill for December for gas and electricity, and it's going to be a lot higher than they're used to, and they're going to call us. The basic monthly charge remains the same. It's a usage charge, which is going to go up, of course, if you use more natural gas or more electricity. So just encourage folks to use balanced billing so they're paying something in the summer so they avoid those spikes in the winter, because it always happens in December. They get their utility bills, and they're very high. At the same time, they get their Christmas bills. And so it's not too late to call for balanced billing. And remember, call before you dig. Support the troops.
Very good. All right. So we'll move right into the agenda. I have the first item. I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Savage Bakken Connector Incorporated 10-inch crude oil pipeline, Williams County siting application case number PU-16-753.
Second.
A public hearing on this case is scheduled for January 19th at 1 p.m. at the Ernie French Center in Williston at the NDSU Williston Research Extension Center on Highway 2. This pipeline is, as I indicated, 2 miles of 10-inch diameter crude oil. It will begin at the Savage Bakken Petroleum Hub Interconnect, which is about 15 miles southwest of Williston, and receive crude oil from the Savage Bakken Petroleum Hub about 3.5 miles southwest of Trenton, and then pump the crude oil through the 2 miles of pipe to the Dakota Access Pipeline. It is going to have the capacity for about 60,000 barrels per day, and it is expected to be in operation if they are able to get the permit and begin construction in the second quarter of 2017. This pipeline is relatively short. It's just 2 miles. And there were two facilities that were within 500 feet. They received the waivers from those two facilities. So it's a pretty straightforward project, and this hearing will be led by a substantive ALJ.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I think you just answered my question, but since it's been on my mind, I'll just throw it out anyway to completely verify. So those two variances were the only ones needed? I know there was some question before, because this particular date, I have a conflict if we were going to be involved with that directly. But so they've got their waivers, so this the substantive ALJ that we appear to be appointing in the administrative portion of the meeting should be handling this case, and we should not need to be there, correct?
That is correct, yes. We were waiting. The last meeting, it was on the agenda. We decided to wait because we hadn't received the waivers from the two facilities that were within the 500 feet, and we have since received those. And so that gives me the comfort to go ahead and have the hearing done with the substantive ALJ, and that's why that's on the motion for admin as well.
Nice to see a good plan come together.
Is there any further discussion?
Maybe just a comment to clarify the ALJ role. It's not uncommon for the commission to appoint an ALJ for a project that we feel a higher level of comfort with going into the siting hearing. But ultimately, the ALJ makes a recommendation to the commission, which we either accept that, reject it, or modify it. So it still is a commission decision when the time comes. It's just the setup will be conducted by the administrative law judge.
Correct. Thank you. Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Okay, does the commission adopt the order on settlement agreement in Public Service Commission versus Quest Corporation, complaint case number PU-15-677.
Second.
We had a hearing on this consent order, but I don't have the date with our...
It was Monday the 12th, I believe, or 10th.
With our previous meeting, I just didn't get a chance to highlight all these things, but bottom line was there had been a number of complaints, actually from around the state. However, they were centered most closely on complaints from North Dakota consumers in the area of the Fairview, Montana exchange, and I want to point that out, even though Fairview is on that side of the border, these customers were North Dakota customers, and then a number of them in the Belfield area. And like I said, there were others, but that was the biggest part of them. And staff brought this complaint early this year already. And a lot of time passed, but the company and our staff worked on this and came to this settlement. And there was a hearing scheduled for it last Monday. But a month or so ago, whatever the exact time was, when they had reached the settlement, we then re-noticed that that would be changed to a... meeting on the settlement rather than the public hearing on the case itself. And so after that, we were unable to take an action because they actually had till yesterday for public comment based on the time that was published. No other public comment has come in. And I'll just go through some of the highlights of the settlement agreement. By the end of 2017, CenturyLink Quest Communications will rehabilitate 8 cable routes in the Belfield area and 2 cable routes in the Fairview area. The company commits to providing customers a repair commitment date during the initial call and provide advance notification if the company is unable to keep its commitment date. The company, and that was one of the complaints that we had, that people had issued a complaint and weren't sure when someone would be coming and ended up spending a lot of time waiting. The company will make arrangements to provide special attention to the 28 complaint customers by providing an email to the North Dakota Regional Supervisor of Operations. The company is also going to take the additional step of expanding fiber in that Belfield Exchange area. And that's a big step that is, I think, beyond just, you know, normal providing the telecommunications service. I think that's a really important part of this settlement to me. The company will file a monthly report with the commission describing the actions that it has taken. And, of course, if they fail to comply with the requirements of the agreement, it will be considered a breach of the agreement. But I don't foresee that happening. The company seems to be all on board with this settlement and moving forward with it. And I think there's some things that probably need to be clarified for a lot of people. You know, the a lot of times we assume rural areas are provided service by the cooperatives and the more urban areas by CenturyLink or Quest, and that's not always the case. They have some of these very rural, expensive-to-serve areas and don't necessarily have access to all of the opportunities that some of the co-ops have to get universal service funds to provide service in those areas. So they certainly face some challenges out there, and that is just a reality that they face. But some of these, we did have a real overload of complaints in these areas. And one thing that I didn't miss in this agreement was they also brought their staffing levels. They had a lot of open positions during the time that these complaints were coming in. And they have already met that goal and gotten their staff fully trained and on board. And that has actually seems to have made a big difference in the number of calls even before they go out and do the cable maintenance work and the laying of the fiber. So just having the staff on board, we think, is likely to solve some of the problems from those areas that are not covered in these Belfield or Fairview exchange areas. The physical upgrades, I think, are going to do wonders in solving these problems. All in all, I think it's a good settlement, and I think that our staff should be commended for their work on the routines around here of handling complaints, but this in particular, because it was kind of a surge of them in specific areas and were some frustrating complaints. But so I think our staff deserves commendation for working through this, as does CenturyLink Quest. Stepped up to the plate, and I think this is much preferable to a penalty where we would fine them and the money would go to the state general fund, and I suppose that there's some good things to say about that, but in this case it's the result of the problems that some of these folks in these rural areas have had, and so I think it's much better to have the company investing that money into fixing the problems and making sure these folks get the kind of service they deserve. So bottom line is I think both staff and the company did a great job on this. I'm really supportive of this settlement agreement, and I hope my fellow commissioners will be as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, I'd just like to make a couple comments on this as well. This has been kind of a long process and somewhat frustrating because I feel like the customers have been waiting quite a while to get these issues addressed. And admittedly, that has been a frustration here, and our processes take some time. And that's just the way the complaint processes work. But that said, where we've come is pretty significant, and I think the resolution of the problems is going to be real and lasting, I hope. And I think that's, you know, really important, especially for these people who have been plagued for a long time with some really faulty lines. So most of telecom is deregulated, but there are pockets where we still do have oversight for service issues, and this is one of them, and these customers that fall in those places where there really isn't any competition, and they do have Quest/CenturyLink, which is regulated for service by us. So this end result of these complaints, and our complaints are down already significantly from Quest from 2015 there was 89 customer complaints. In 2016, it's down to 56. And only 27 of those are related to outages. The rest are related to billing issues, which we don't necessarily blame the company for on those. So the trend is moving in the right direction. This settlement really does three things. It improves the communication to customers. So customers will receive a commitment from the company as to when they're going to be out there to fix something. And if they can't be there, they're going to call the customer. That's been one of the big complaints all along by these folks, is that they aren't. The company says they're going to come and fix something, and they never show up. So that's going to be settled, and the North Dakota staff is committed to having their managers knowing about who's getting complaints and what the process is for solving them and staying on top of that. They've improved the staffing, as Randy suggested, which will help them address the customer complaints in a timely manner. And then the significant new investments that they're making in fiber to this area, which provides the long-term solution that I think can give us some comfort that the fixes will be lasting. So all in all, I think this is a great settlement. It's a significant investment by Quest / CenturyLink of $2.6 million in infrastructure to address these issues. And I think that that's a really important step and a great thing for these communities that are going to get that investment.
Is there any further discussion?
Just a couple add-ons, I guess. First off, I see Kent is here from CenturyLink Quest, so if you have any detailed questions of the company, I believe he's right there, and he looked forward to that opportunity. Right, Kent? Absolutely. The reason for the special meeting today is actually this case. This case up until December 19th, anyone requesting a formal hearing. So once that deadline passed, that's why we didn't have this on a previous agenda. So that's kind of why we had the special meeting. I do appreciate, I'm going to support the settlement agreement. One of the things I just wanted to highlight a little bit is that this case is tracking through, of course, you see it filed, you know, staff and the company are back and forth a little bit. But one of the things that I think is challenging is there's really no service standard to hold a company to. There's never been one put into law about this is the standard they have to do. And that was folks long before my time felt that it wasn't necessary. But as you get into the hearing, it was interesting because one of the questions I asked one of the witnesses, Stacy, I said, so there's no service standard, so what do you think about this? And she said, whatever the standard may have not been, this is certainly not the kind of standard that we want, we have. It is so outside the realm of what good service is. So then you go back to why don't customers go somewhere else? Well, as Julie pointed out, this area of the state does not have the wireless opportunity that other areas do. It does not have other providers that the customers can go to. And so it's a challenge because CenturyLink Quest does a nice job, but they also are restricted too, that they're providing a lot of miles to a lot of different areas where some of these other companies are providing a lot of service in a real compact area. So I appreciate the dilemma the company's in and appreciate the investment that they're putting into this. But I also will say that going forward, I think telecom will continue to be more and more deregulated. And so that's the message, I think, to CenturyLink, that the proof's going to be in the pudding, that this is a settlement agreement, that I'm going to support, staff agrees, the company agrees. But as this thing continues, if we see a bunch more complaints coming in, there'll be more that'll come down the road. So I do appreciate the way this all played itself out, do appreciate the work that everyone's done, and I just look forward to seeing how this all plays out.
I do have one other point that I neglected to make earlier. It has to do with rights of way. You know, the Bellfield and the Fairview Exchange is one thing they have in common. They're out west, right? And we know in the last decade or so, with all the activity that's occurred out there, the other industries have driven up the expectations that people have for what allowing a right of way across their property is worth. And for industries like telecommunications, some of the prices that are being demanded are just amounts that can't be paid for a telecommunications right-of-way. And so telecommunications companies out there face some real challenges in acquiring rights-of-way. That's just a tough reality. Now, a lot of these cable upgrades can occur within existing right-of-way, So that takes care of itself, but and I should also point out, sometimes it's not even price. There are some people who have gotten tired of one industry after another coming in with another easement and another easement, and maybe they've had some bad experiences, and they just refuse to deal with anyone at all for a right-of-way. And so, you know, if that's the case, it doesn't even matter what the price is. They just say no. And if they're living in some other state or some other city and not needing telecommunications service, they probably don't understand the problems that their neighbors out there are having. And so they do face some real troubles. The fiber, my understanding is, will require a new right-of-way. And so if that becomes impossible, that could be a factor that causes that not to happen. But it's also my understanding that the company has worked with the state to allow most, if not all, of this right-of-way to occur on state highway department right-of-way. And I know that the DOT typically does not like that, because then someday when the road needs rebuilding or something, you have more infrastructure in the way that needs to be moved before you can work and that sort of thing. So they really try to avoid that. But most, if not all, of this fiber upgrade hinges on the state providing that right-of-way.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay. Thank you, Darrell. That concludes our regular agenda on the special meeting, and so we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Almost half of this settlement comes out of federal funds. Or maybe this is a question for Kent. Does this take away the 5 points? This comes out of the 5.6 that you folks received last year. Over 6 years that you got last year. Is this going to shortchange any other communities or projects?
You should turn your mic on there, but I mean, James. That would be a question for the company, I think, to answer. Kent, do you want to step up to the mic and answer that? I'm okay with it.
I think we're fine with that.
Yeah, you can.
Yep.
I believe the question was whether or not this use of the Connect America Fund Belfield area will somehow shortchange the rest of the state. The answer is no. The Belfield area was one of the ones that was going to be slated anyway. This settlement did move that up, and it became more of a priority to try and get that done faster, but no, it did not.
Okay, thank you.
I do think it's important when you say that it's federal funds to mention that those are federal funds collected by telecom taxes. So they are paid by,
Understood.
Not federal government money. It's
money
that
go
everybody is paying on their bills every month, and then being redirected into that. So I just think that's an important distinction for the public.
I would make the distinction.
Remember.
It's public money.
Yeah, well.
Collected from taxes.
Telecom taxes. We all see those and pay those every month and wonder what the heck happens to all this money. Here's an example.
It's not their income taxes. And it's not money being borrowed from bondholders or the federal government. It's money collected for telecom and used for telecom.
He answered my question. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Do you know offhand how many gathering pipelines go into the Dakota Access Pipeline?
This might be number 7 or 8, but we can. I don't. This isn't a gathering line. This is a connector, so this is a transmission line.
Well, connectors, gatherers, whatever goes.
Okay. Well, there's a big difference between a gatherer and a the gatherers are the ones we don't regulate.
Sure.
And they don't feed directly into Dakota Access that I'm aware of. The transmission lines, so they collect it, and then it's transported through a transmission line like this. A connector, and I believe this is number 7 or number 8, but we can double check. Stacy has a list. Yeah, we're kind of tracking that, so we'll get back. We'll get that from her.
Have those all been permitted?
Yes, the connectors from us have been. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But whether there's gathering lines feeding this Dakota Access, I'd be surprised by that. But there may be. That would be a question for the company. I would think, Pat, would those have to be cited?
I think if by definition a gathering line wouldn't go into that. But
if a gathering line connects into Dakota Access, it's automatically a transmission line, right? Because the system?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Just a comment, medication.
You got it. That's the answer.
Google search.
Well, that's what Grandma forgot.
Anything else?
Is there any thoughts on delaying permitting of connector lines or transmission lines to the Dakota Access Pipeline until that situation has been clarified? Or will you just keep moving forward?
No, I think that our role is the companies come forward with projects. We review them and permit them according to whether they meet the standards of their law to get a permit. And they know what's going on. The companies know what's going on with Dakota Access, and their investment is at their own risk. So,
well, I would extend upon that. This commission made a decision January of 2016. To my mind, the Dakota Access is clarified from this commission's position. We've made a decision. The appeal period is over. Our decision is done. So I think that all this rhetoric going on the pipeline, it continues to frustrate me because the process has been followed. The appeal periods are long since over. Here now, this has been going on since August. We've seen nothing from anybody. So the case is behind us. It's time to move forward. The follow-up.
But the pipeline's not completed and there's no easement. Do you guys feel like
the commission has a lot of orders out there for wind farms that have 4-year period to build it, and up until that period of time we've issued the permit, they do what they do. So I look at this project, it's been properly sited, it's got 4 years to build it under this permit, and it's no different than a lot of other cases we have that we've made decisions on.
Would you like to see the Army Corps issue the easement, and do you think they will? Have you communicated with them at all?
The communication that we've had with the Corps is we've received their feedback. They've seen our order. I would like them to make a decision like they did that was already supported and already upheld. So I think that this pipeline needs to be built. It's long since the point of anything, any gain is being put forward at this point in time.
Any other questions? Okay. Oh, Dave.
No, I was going to say, do you want to discuss the potential lawsuit?
Well, I think it's fair to say, because the news release is going to be coming out in a little while, that this morning we had a special meeting. We consulted with Attorney General Stengem on his opinion, his advice on whether or not he thinks that the commission or the PSC and the state should fight back on the stream protection rule that has been finalized now and filed in the Federal Registry and will be law in 30 days if nothing changes by Congress. We've been on record strongly opposed to that rule and had people out here, and Commissioner Christen will have lots to say about what he told them when they were here, people from OMS and Interior, and the comments we gave, because we think that the rule is completely inapplicable to North Dakota. It's developed and intended to address issues in Appalachia, and it's not relevant to the mining in North Dakota and will have serious repercussions for our mining industry. So we pushed back strongly, showed them firsthand, here's where it doesn't, this doesn't work here. It doesn't address a problem, and it's going to be complicated. And so we did move this morning to and pass the motion this morning to direct the Attorney General to file a complaint in the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. against the Interior Department on this rule. Commissioner Christen, you have
something? Well, I think I'll just add to that, you know, under the federal law, states that have a reclamation program that meets all the federal standards have exclusive authority over the mine reclamation programs. North Dakota has done that and operated a program for decades now, and has received tremendous reviews when the Office of Surface Mining has done our reviews. As recently as last summer, we got a review that said that we run a very effective program and that no corrective action is needed. And now, just a few months later, the same administration would basically overturn that state authority by switching it to a federal authority and completely undoing things. And it's not just a sensitivity over authority that, it's someone might argue that, well, it's just a small switch, and in one area they're going to have authority now, but the rest of the state will. It's much more than that, because what they're proposing to do here effectively takes a good part of our coal reserves and makes them impossible to mine. And so this is not just a technicality of rule or a little turf war over who has authority of over something. This is going to, this rule, if it becomes effective, is going to have an enormous impact on our lignite industry, and I would argue shut the vast majority of it down. It is going to make much of our coal reserves impractical to ever mine.
Randy, would you give the example of the ag land? That was one of the most extreme elements of it that I noticed.
It sure was to me. You know, there's a legal definition, and I couldn't repeat exactly how they come up with it, of prime farmland. And I know as an ag producer, you know, all of us that are in the ag production business, we think of our best fields as our prime farmland. However, that's not what they mean by prime farmland. It's a certain definition, and if you look at a map of North Dakota's prime farmland, it would look very similar to most people have seen maps of wetlands, where there's just little oddly shaped areas drawn out all over the state of wetlands. That's what our prime farmland looks like. It's not this 160-acre quarter of land is a real good field, and thus it's prime farmland. No, there might be 20 or 25 acres in there in various odd-shaped pieces that are prime farmland. The rest of it is not prime farmland by their definition. Well, my understanding of the stream protection rule would require that anything that's not prime farmland be put back into native species of grasses. And so much of this land that you see that's been reclaimed, that is some of the best fields around in places like Oliver and Mercer and McLean counties, would, under these rules, not be able to be put back into crop production. They would be planted back into native species of grass. There's all kinds of requirements for trees being planted around waterways and the intermittent stream protections that for streams that just flow for maybe a few days in the spring when the snow melts. It just is so impractical because this is drawn up to meet a perceived need in Appalachia, and I'm not very familiar with West Virginia coal mining, so I don't really mean to weigh in here on whether that need for changes in the way they do mining out in Appalachia needs changes or not. That's not my area. But the changes that the Interior Department is proposing to fix the Interior Department's perception of need out in Appalachia is going to have devastated consequences when applied to North Dakota lignite mining.
I agree with everything my colleague said. The exclusive authority is a big one that jumps out. And one of the questions that I had this morning was, you know, typically the AG files their cases in behalf of the state without consulting with the PSC. This was a little bit different, and I think it kind of clarified in my mind that the PSC, in behalf of the state, has this authority, so the PSC has directly threatened our authority more so than any cases we've seen. So that's why there was the consultation discussion that took place today. So it really affects what we do. And also, the reason to move so quickly on this is North Dakota is kind of unique on this. We're the outlier. Our arguments are much different than Wyoming, much different than the Appalachian states. So it's important that we get our arguments out there. One of the things that will play out is this is, I'm sure, already been filed, and the AG will have a press release that will go out shortly with some more details. But the Congress also has a role in this, potential role, given that it's so close to the end of administration. There's rules that Congress can go in and basically stop this if they choose to do so. So I imagine the three of us will follow up with the delegation in our own ways to see what they plan to do. But it's very interesting that even as we get to the end of the administration, they still contend that to push an agenda of anti-coal. And when we ask the question about, okay, we argue that it's our exclusive authority. What is the counter argument back? And there's nothing there. So it's a continued push on it. And I'm very thankful the Attorney General basically had all this prepared. So then today we just had the discussion because the Attorney General's office, it's interesting, the motion today directed the Attorney General's office, but it was more of he was leaning very far into this, had it all prepared. We just got updated on the arguments. And now we'll follow through very closely with the Attorney General on this as it all unfolds.
Have you joined other states or
systems? No, we'll be the first one in. And the question that was a question we had today. So I can't say we'll be the first one. We're hopeful that we'll be the first ones in with our argument. But other states may join us. But the point we don't want to wait. Our argument will be different than Wyoming's. The argument will be different than the other states. So it won't make sense to join with them. If other states want to do something with us, that's fine. But we've got the unique lignite, the unique argument. So we're going to best position to get in early and move forward in our position.
Is there hope with the new administration that this will be all for naught, i.e. filing the lawsuit?
I don't think that's one of the questions we asked. The process of rulemaking and lawmaking, a new president cannot come in and just unravel this quickly. It's a whole legal process. So the quickest resolution would be if Congress acts and limits the president's ability to do so. If the Republican-controlled House and the Senate can't move in the time need be, then our role will be much different come January, February timeframe, because I think this January 20th, this would go into law. Ironically, that's got to be about the day of the inauguration. So moving today, I think, preserved North Dakota's rights, preserved our position. We wait to see what Congress does. If Congress moves to stop it and they're successful, then I think this is perhaps just the end of it. If they don't move, then we'll be following through with they'll have to file their briefs back. We'll file ours. We'll end up in some kind of court. We'll know more in January how this will play.
There's really two tracks. This one, filing the complaint and preserving our arguments and our place in court. And then there's the congressional track, which they come back in session on January 3rd. They have 60 days from January 3rd to make a decision and to repeal any of these. And then that would be sent to Trump, President Trump, and then he would have to sign it. And that would be basically effectively do away with the rule. And if that doesn't happen, and what we're going to be watching closely is the rule becomes effective within that 60-day time period. So we have to have some indication from Congress before the rule becomes acted, which is 30 days from today, that they're going to be doing something to take action, you know, on this rule, or else we'll have to look at potentially other steps.
And I would say, you know, it's my hope that we did this for nothing and that the congressional review is going to occur. Mm-hmm. That's the best way. That'll save a lot of litigation costs. That'll make it, get rid of what I think is a very bad rule much more quickly. That certainly is the best solution. But we sometimes work to in the process of getting three of us together on something. There's 535 people elected to various congressional and Senate seats down in D.C., and who knows what's going to happen in those 60 days between January 3rd and, the 60 days after January 3rd. I think that North Dakota's energy industry is far too important to just assume that this is going to get done through the Congressional Review Act. We needed to take this action. Make sure and get our place in the process legally and move forward with this. And I think it was just an important move for the commission to make.
Was there any estimates on how much this might cost and whose budget?
We have funding in our current budget. It's called the Specialized Legal Services Fund, and it's precisely for this type of action. The legislature gave us the funds to use to help protect states' rights and our jurisdiction on energy-related issues, coal mining and others. So there's approximately $300,000 left in that fund still moving forward for this biennium, and that will provide the funding to cover the cost of this litigation. And we don't have an estimate right now on how much that will be.
So the Public Service Commission will be the named plaintiff then?
Let's see.
I think the state of North Dakota.
North Dakota? Okay.
Yeah.
We have other legal work coming out of that fund as well, though.
Right. Yeah, but it's generally, and grain licensing insolvencies comes out of there as well.
One of the things that was unique, we were all waiting for the final rule to come out. We'd seen the proposed rule, and they came out and they talked to all these people thinking there might be changes in the final rule. There really was zero significant changes from the final rule to the proposed rule. So all the quote-unquote public input sessions and work they did to change things, they didn't do a lick different. So the proposed rule and the final rule ended up to be virtually the same. So it just was, I think, a delaying tactic.
If you'd like to have copies of our comments, we'd be happy to provide those to you, the comments that we provided to the agency in response to the rule, comments which they essentially ignored. But they do lay out the case for the state and for our issues with it. Anything else? Okay, thank you for joining us. We will, would my colleagues prefer to go straight into the admin portion and then sign, or would you like to sign first and then do the admin portion? I'd prefer to do the admin first just because it's not that
long.
Keep
rolling.
Okay, so we'll move right into the admin portion of the meeting. Merry Christmas to our members of the media who attended. Look forward to seeing you in the new year, if not before. Listen to you every day, Dave. Okay, so let me pull out the admin agenda. We have one item on consent and move passage of that item.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Okay, just two items under discussion. The first one is Commissioner Kalk. You can go ahead and lead that. PSC staff participation in neighborhood committees.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you for opening this up. Basically, the we're all involved in NARUC at some level, and we always encourage staff to be involved in different committees to broaden experience and when we can. But I think what's one of the things that I guess I've been tracking a little bit is I wish Alana was here, and she's not. She's out on vacation now, but she's kind of the focus of my thoughts. Is that she's been the chair of the staff subcommittee on legal for over 8 years. And one of the concerns is that, I had a chairmanship there for 2 years as well as others, and I think that's kind of the period. And I've never really brought it up before because we were able to make it work. But I'm getting very concerned now with the increased need for legal services, that we really need to peel back some of those things that our attorneys are doing outside of the direct office working. So certainly not against it, but I would like to – basically, I think that 8 years is far too long. Quite honestly, for one, it's – you're president of MARC for 1 year. We're our own chairs for 2 years. So basically, Alana will make a decision what involvement going forward for NARUC for her and Jack. But I think it's time that she moved that committee, subcommittee staff chair to someone else.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, Brian. And Alana's spent a lot of years working in NARUC and has wisdom to share. So I think there's a balance in terms of how much she peels back her involvement there. But in light of the fact that we've had a couple discussions in our last two meetings about the need for more assistance in legal and the heavy workload that's coming up with the session and everything else, I think it's appropriate to really decline her request to go to this the upcoming NARUC meeting in February. And then to just see how the workload goes, and also to encourage that if there's going to be more PUD involvement in NARUC, that she help work to get Jack involved as much as he can, because he hasn't been involved in NARUC, and he has a lot that he can learn through that process. And so I think that that's a transition that probably needs to start happening between Alana and Jack. And I'm not saying that I don't think Alana should be involved in NARUC at all, but I think that there should be a transition occurring between her and Jack, and getting Jack more involved and Alana less involved, because she has been there for many years now and gotten a lot of out of that organization, and we need her help here in the office. So I agree with you.
Well, the subcommittee, I think, is one thing that I would like her to step down from. She's been there over 8 years.
Yeah.
And so that is the, I know that, you know, I had the staff chair when I was a chair, and you need to rotate the subcommittee chairs too. And if you don't ask the question or push the issue, they tend to just leave the same person over and over, and that's not right either.
Right. Agreed.
Agreed.
Do you have any thoughts, Randy, anymore?
So then,
okay.
Should that, she's, till she gets back on vacation, do you want me to have that discussion, or does the new chair want to do it, or just basically, because we'll need to ask her to do that.
Yeah. I'm comfortable with either you or Randy.
I'll ask the incoming chair, because I'm happy to do it in January when she gets back, or I would defer to you.
You probably should.
I probably, yeah, except for, are they waiting on an answer right now with reservations, or what's
well, that's the issue. There's two issues. One is the travel to this neighborhood, which both Brian and I think we should say no. If you agree with that, then that
yep.
issue is done. And then the second issue is requesting that she give up her chairmanship of the subcommittee.
Okay, yeah, I can have that discussion.
Okay.
That's all I have, Matt.
So that
and
can wait until
her return.
The third
issue would be
trying
to get Jack more involved in Nayrook and helping make that transition.
And okay. I did do a quick cursory. We have no other staff members that are involved in that capacity at Nayrook, so it's not like we're focusing on just one. It's nobody else is that involved.
Yeah. And as time and travel dollars allow, I think Nayrook is a good organization, so I don't want to send a wrong signal to staff and to directors like Pat that they shouldn't be sending. But I think there's some effort that needs to be made to incorporate the new staff and folks that haven't been exposed so that they can get up to speed and get engaged in some of those networks. Okay. Anything else on that? All righty.
Yeah.
Then the second item I just wanted to talk about was, it should have been budget testimony, but I just wanted to clarify. So, Randy, you're putting together testimony with Stacy, and I've looked at some of the stuff that Conrad had put together on the rail program. So I wanted to get your feeling. I would like to be involved in the testimony on just the rail program, and I didn't want to, I just wanted to talk to you about how you envision that moving forward. And how I could get incorporated into that either at the end of the testimony or at some point so that I can speak to what's kind of happened over the course of the last 2 years.
Well, since she's sitting here, I'm able to rely on her because I don't remember what kind of a deadline we gave, but we went through the testimony. Basically, it was Jill and Stacy and I.
Mm-hmm.
And went through the testimony that we had 2 years ago, and you know, there are some things that are, you know, like the soil probe that are, you know, completely off the discussion point now. There's going to be some new things. But a lot of it will be following kind of the same format. And each of the divisions at the time had a section in there. Of course, in the case of the rail safety program, it was, you know, multiple pages because it was a brand new thing that was being developed and that needed a lot of explanation. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be much shorter, more similar to our other existing divisions. But we requested then that each of the division heads kind of look at that as kind of a template and then write up a new one. And those should be back here pretty soon, or maybe we've had that date and then we were going to get together again. And I certainly... we'll say for either of you, any of the divisions or areas where they fall under your portfolios, if you have thoughts on it, we'll certainly.
I had a question.
Entertain those.
Are you thinking? Question is your question on the preparation or the delivery? Because I always envision that the preparation, we all three have to agree on the budget the chair is going to deliver. Otherwise, the chair shouldn't be delivering it, or we'll do a dissented.
Right.
But if are you talking actually delivering
both.
It? Because I guess my thought would be I would be against having anybody other than the chair deliver our testimony, because it then if you want to do it, then I want to do it. Because then I want to talk about how important pipeline safety is. And I think then we diminish. If you get up and talk more about rail, that means that's more important than something else. And, you know, I wasn't the chair of the last session, but I would love to talk more about the pipeline stuff. So I think that if we're going to open it up to more than the chair is going to do it, then we all three should say something. Because otherwise it just sends too weird a signal. And I just, if there's the chair delivers the testimony and there's questions about the rail, I think that's very appropriate that the portfolio holder stand up and answer those questions, or if it's about pipelines, and I would stand up. But I think the delivery should come from the chair.
Well, this is why I wanted to have this discussion, is because I feel more strongly about the rail program than you do. And I know that the rail program is going to need, there's going to be questions on it because it's the first time that there's results to share. So I want to make sure that we have, that you feel comfortable doing it. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that and defending what's been done, that you feel comfortable asking me to do that, or that I have an opportunity to do that. Because somebody has to stand up and say, here's what's been done. And I've been tracking it and keeping track of examples and stuff very closely for the last 2 years. So.
Well, and I expect a couple of things. First of all, it's not like the program expires this year. It's a four-year program.
But it could expire at any time. You know, we
like anything can. But it's really in the same situation as any of our other divisions.
You're not a real strong supporter of it. Let's be honest.
It's here now, and right. I support us having it now.
Okay.
And so I expect we're going to have testimony that you're going to like, and that I will deliver, and I intend to deliver it well. If I were king, that's not the only thing that I might look at differently than the three of us look at when we make decisions jointly. But I expect to deliver all of this testimony effectively. Now, when there's questions, if there's intense questioning about pipeline safety, we very may well want Brian to come up and answer them, just like I may have done last time on mine reclamation or something like that, if there were direct questions about that. So, yes, I can see on the answering questions, but I do think that I should deliver the testimony, but we'll certainly work closely with everybody in preparing it.
Okay. Good. That's perfect. That's better than me getting up there. I wanted to have an open conversation because I know it's not been a real favorite program of yours, and I didn't want you to feel like you had to get up there and talk about it if you didn't want to, or if you didn't feel like it was something that you really could do. So I have looked at the testimony from Conrad, and it's not nearly as long. I mean, it's pretty concise. It just goes through, here's what we found for the over the course of the year, and here's how the program went from start to where we're at today. And it's pretty decent.
And those are, statements of facts, and just they're realities. They are what the program is and what it's done. And in the same vein as with reclamation, we don't go back and make the case that was made back in the 70s of why we should have a program. We point out what the program does and how well it's working, and if they're facing some new hurdle or something like that, we probably bring that up. But I think you'll be happy with the testimony.
Okay, very good. Sounds good. All right. Anything else?
I haven't seen it yet, so you've seen it more than I have.
Yeah, actually, it's straightforward.
I think the point, I think, is this budget testimony, we all have to agree on it. Or no, we disagree, and then we counter then. But when we look at our schedule, that's where we talked before at one time about having – is that what we've got
– I think we scheduled time.
That's what I'm asking. Is that the January 4th time that we've scheduled for legislative meeting to review budget testimony?
I believe so.
Okay. So that will be – if I remember right, we sit in there and we go through it together, and one of us doesn't like it, we try to agree on it. If not, we submit countering budget testimony.
Yeah.
But okay, so then the 4th, because I wouldn't envision before the week of the 9th that we'd actually deliver it. So okay.
Yep, I think we're all on. I mean, I think the staff have made good progress on getting the testimony together, and Randy's met with them, and so we're probably even ahead of the game. So
while we're on the budget discussion, I want to add one more point under budget discussion, if I could.
I leave that one though. What was the timing for them to get those done?
It was Friday, and I do have all of them now. I just need to put them together for you. Okay. And this is only the beginning section that just does the summaries of each program. We have not gotten into the actual explaining the budget and justifying budget stuff yet. So this was just the summaries that says this is what my program does and here's some accomplishments.
Okay, so then just to wrap this part of the discussion up, with those being completed now, and we've had kind of this whirlwind of of meetings and special meetings and all kinds of things, and the schedule looks a lot less intense the rest of this week and next week, but I'm intending to be around a good part of the time, so I'm hopeful that I'll be able to work some time in with Jill and Stacy to work on this quite a bit more in this before that January 3rd or 4th meeting.
The other, that's a good point, Stacy, about the, and thank you for clarifying that, that this is just the introduction, because if I'm remembering correctly from 2 years ago, really, I don't even think I used the introduction in the actual testimony. That's the stuff that kind of gets, it's in there for the record, and then you really get into the nuts and bolts of here's what our budget is, and here's, you know, so that gets into all the licensing changes and all that other stuff. So, or drafting that, or who drafts that, or is Randy drafting
the budget piece of it?
Yeah, or Jill?
Maybe I think it's going to be after a collaboration. I don't have that knowledge. In the past, Josh kind of took a lead on it. So, knowing did she walk in by? Yeah. Knowing that Jill's kind of new to this too, I think we'll just have to sit down and strategize about who kind of takes the lead on that. But yeah,
you can follow the format in terms of tone and, you know, that sort of thing from the previous one and just kind of substitute the new information. Did we do anything written on this budget? I don't think we did. We haven't done a news release or anything about it to sort of summarize what the key points were. So that'll all have to be sort of developed from scratch.
I'm assuming we'll want to get together now that I have the first part done and strategize on how we want to tackle the rest of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, because, like, we can work together to, you know, get the numbers and everything, but as far as, you know, what we want to say for our justification behind why we, you know, what we do and don't disagree, or do agree and don't disagree, or, you know, compared to the governor's budget.
Yeah.
What we like, what we don't like. So, yeah, that's something that we'll probably have to have a broader discussion on. And, then making sure that the tone, so it all sounds like one person is saying it and presenting it.
Well, and the good thing is, other than the grain licensing, that whole evolution of changes, we don't have that many different things.
Right.
Then either the existing or the governor's proposal. Mm-hmm. They're fairly similar. So,
well, that's where I would, my point about the pipeline stuff, I could make a long argument about that, but I think then it just makes it more muddled up, because I do think that pipeline extra inspector was just as important as anything else we do. So anyway.
I wouldn't be opposed to adding a section about that, and I would envision the stuff about the rail being part of the testimony that talks about this budget, because there is a special request. So that, I think, would go into the
whole paragraphs to get to you on that, and I think that's perfect.
And you could probably just use the stuff that Conrad's preparing, you know, portions of it in that section when you talk about this year's budget or this next biennium's budget, and making those, and then the specialized legal services fund. There's good language in there about that already, so that could be reused. And then it's the licensing piece and the restructure. Actually, there's quite a lengthy explanation of the restructure that we use when we announce it to staff, and that might provide some good basic.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, basic text to use as a starting point. Then it doesn't have to all be invented. I can email that to you. So.
That's a good idea. I forgot about that.
And there's more detail in there than probably you need, but it'll provide a foundation. Okay. Anything else on budget testimony?
Not on the testimony.
Budget?
Just the last meeting, we basically, Craig is now the program manager for pipeline safety. And what I'm working with our budget section now to see where we're at exactly with salary dollars. I know it's real tight. But if there's a little bit available, I'm going to send a proposal probably the next meeting on a slight increase for Craig, whether it turns out to be $2 a month or something, if we have it. But I just wanted to cue that up so when you see it, you won't be surprised.
Recognizing his...
his promotion, as you will, to pick up more authority.
Yeah.
He certainly agreed to do it, and he's not expecting anything, but I'd like to go through the numbers once we settle out with all the hires and see where exactly we're at, and then I'll propose something.
Okay. Very well. Okay. I believe that's the last item on our agenda for discussion. calls to close another year
the final
at the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're adjourned.